So back with Steve. Steve, we're talking about, you know, what the brain might do when we ingest this fentanyl or carfentanil. And it's really uncertain. You know, as I mentioned, there's ways now to see how a brain with the addictive genetics, if you want, reacts differently than a brain without the genetics, you know, while ingesting different drugs. So we're on the way. But again, when we get to fentanyl, carfentanil, it's another ball game. And, you know, why do people go from, you know, something as, well, if it's not cut with it, forget that part. But I mean, if you're just a pot smoker or a beer drinker or something, what on earth gets somebody to fentanyl? You know, like that, like it doesn't add up anymore. It's, you know, there used to be kind of a, you know, a line of resistance or a path that people would, you know, end up on, like coke, you would say. And you would think, well, a coke user is never going to bother with fentanyl unless someone slaps it on him, you know, and he doesn't know. But that's not true anymore. I mean, people, I don't know, it's just it's like excitement about that, the most risky thing and the greatest high and all this stuff. And, you know, I met a guy in jail, and here's one of the answers a couple of weeks ago. And I met another one who was with that guy a couple of weeks before. Anyway, that guy, I don't know what happened to him, but he's not back in the same area of the jail. But he was telling me, he said, I can tell you what it is. This guy's a mechanical engineer, 7 kids, and he was only 30. And, you know, but in the streets, you know what I mean? A mess. And he says, I can't take the withdrawal. I can't come off that stuff. He says, it is, you know, and he said, I've been through chemotherapy, which I've been through, and I know the horrors of that stuff. He said, I would take that. I would take permanent depression, anything. He said, you know, I'm not coming off unless I have to. And he said, and I just had to come off because for 2 weeks I've been in the hole here, and, you know, and I'm clean. So I don't have any desire. I don't even want to see, hear, or anything else about it. But coming off it is just out of this world horrible, you know. And again, it's almost consistent just with opiates in general. But still, it's more. It's always more, you know. I don't get it.
Yeah, it's definitely more. But there's actually an organization, MAPS. They're called, and they're actually trying to, like, they're one of the organizations that I'm going to be donating to, like, for the proceeds. And their main thing is they're trying to figure out the come downs, the withdrawals for opiates, fentanyl. So they're doing a lot of research on how to ease the pain. I guess that's what it is. I guess once you start, I don't know what the withdrawals are like on some of those drugs. So I guess it's easier said than done. Like, why do you keep doing it?
Tell us just, sorry to butt in there, but tell us, like, in your own experience. I mean, you know, you've openly admitted you've had some problems with drugs. Your drug of choice was coke, right?
Yeah.
What was that withdrawal, and how did you get past it, and so on? Sorry about the MAPS part.
I personally, I didn't really feel any withdrawals. It was just, it becomes unmanageable to the point where, okay, so you aren't sleeping, right? You have to go to work the next morning, but you're up at 4 or 5 a.m. still getting high. So it was more of just the exhaustion, the everyday exhaustion of not sleeping. And then you come back home, you have to keep yourself up, so you hit more, you do more. I was never in any physical pain or I wasn't in any pain. Like, there's psychosis, right? Where you do start hallucinating, you start seeing things. It can be detrimental. You it's not fun mentally.
No.
But in terms of, like, the withdrawal and pain, I haven't experienced that. It was just the repetition of, I haven't slept, now I'm working. I'm working on tools. I'm tired, I'm exhausted, I can't keep my eyes open, I gotta get the job done. My work's slacking. Now I get home, I barely can keep my eyes open. Okay, I need to wake up. And all of a sudden, it's 3 p.m., and next thing you know, it's 11. And you're still on. You're still going and going and going. So, I don't know. But, like, for me, I think it's just something I've always done, like, in terms of, like, with drugs in general, right? I started at a young age. I started smoking pot at 12. And I did that pretty much every day until I was like 18, 19, right? And I never thought of it as like an addiction, Right. No. I thought it was something to do.
Sure. Yeah.
Something we do. All of a sudden, I stopped smoking pot. And I said, you see, I can kick it. But I substituted it.
Yeah.
That's all I did without even realizing it. Yeah, I stopped smoking pot.
Mm-hmm.
But now I'm doing cocaine. I'm drinking a lot. I'm doing a lot of coke. Yeah. And you just... I don't know how it works, but it just takes over real quick, real quick.
It's interesting. Now, you were able to withdraw fairly easily. Yeah. I've heard that quite often, and one of the questions I often ask is, you know, are you sure you're an addict? You know, and just by virtue of not being able to stop using once you start kind of thing, whether that's a binge reaction or not, doesn't matter. Like you say, time would disappear, days disappear, and the only thing you're living for is getting high, even though you're working on all that, because you know something in your brain says, well, you got to make money to be able to do this stuff, et cetera, et cetera. So you do it. You're a functional addictive personality, if nothing else, or a functional compulsive. But when it comes down to the actual addiction, sometimes. And I don't know what it is. I think this is where God gets involved. But you just seem to be able to one day dig down deep enough and get a handle on it. And many can't, and many think they're ready, but they're not. And it goes on, and hence relapse. But the pain of withdrawal versus, you know, what you experience versus others is just... you know, unbelievable.
It's actually funny you said that, because I actually never viewed myself as an addict until I got into rehab and we learned more about the addiction. Like, the addiction, the addiction itself was because, I was definitely a functioning addict. Never thought I was an addict. People didn't know to my extent. I was able to get away with my parents and my wife.
Yeah.
They wouldn't really know.
Yeah.
The times that I was really, really high, I wouldn't come home.
Yeah.
But it's easy to make up an excuse or I'm working or whatever.
Yeah.
Right? But it was a consistent, like, for me, what really did it for me was I never would have taken money from my family. I always had another account. That would be my play money. And I'll always like rationalize with myself, like, okay, once that amount goes, it goes. But you see, I developed, the reason why I do, where I saw my addiction come in was with gambling. Okay. I would always go to the casino, and for the longest time, I'd always be, if I had $100, I spent the $100, and that was it.
Yeah.
And over the last couple of years, and it's the same thing happened with the cocaine, where it became like an everyday $400 or $500 habit use.
Yeah.
Same with the casino. I would notice I'd be at the casino, I'd lose my $100, and I never would have touched it before.
Yeah.
But all of a sudden now I'm pulling out $1,000.
Yeah.
And if I lose that, I'm pulling out more. Yeah. And I never had that behavior. So like the addiction, something had just changed. Like I was a user and I was a habitual user for the longest time since I was 12 with weed, drinking, coke.
Yeah.
But over the last couple of years, something kind of like something in the brain, the chemistry in the brain became, and maybe I got lucky. Maybe I nipped it in the butt before it got too out of hand. Like, my parents and my wife would tell you otherwise. Yeah, it was out of hand.
Yeah.
But that's when I started noticing, because like with the gambling, and then
it's progressive, it's a progressive disease addiction, I believe, anyway. And there's an imaginary line that once crossed becomes more and more difficult to get a handle on it. And, you know, whether you believe in spiritual freedom or not, it's not really the point. It just seems at some point, and this is what I've always said, you know, that I think almost anybody, if they, you know, get serious enough about a use of anything that's addictive, they'll probably develop the genetics even to have something that says, wow, I can't stop anymore. You know, and I've seen that over and over again, and some nip it in the bud before it really, you know, before it's hooks in too deep sort of thing. But I think the real answer, and you kind of touched on it in the beginning here, is that we've got to teach the kids somehow not to start.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there really is no other, you know. Because if you didn't start, and I mean, you know, what's the biggest, you know, thing everybody's all excited about in the last year or so is the, you know, using cannabis and be allowed to and so on. I mean, I talk to addicts every day in jail, lots and lots and lots, and not one of them thinks cannabis ever should have been made legal.
No.
Well, you know, and you know what I mean?
It's the gateway. It's
well,
the gateway.
No,
it's,
but, you know, you try and talk to that about the producers and the money makers.
No, it's money making.
The tax collectors, you know what I mean?
Like, yeah, it's business.
It's incredible that it's not so visible. I mean, if, you know, if I'd never probably smoked a cigarette at, like you say, at 12, and that's what I did, I'd probably never smoked anything else.
Yeah.
You know, and really, because I mean, to me, oh yeah, well, that's easy. You know, you just in it goes, inhale it, and off you go. And then the rest is kind of, it's the circles and it's everything else. And then someday you cross that line, you use it as an escape. And my contention is the escape becomes the habit that becomes the addiction. If you're predisposed to addiction, if you have the genetics to start, which many do. Yeah. I mean, my son, his first drink was. That was it. It was a new life, and it never turned back until it was over. You know, so you know, and again, it's different for everyone. And you know, we'll talk on triggers a little. I'm going to take one more break here, and that'll get us home after that. So, my friend Jason, who by the way is a producer and runs his own show, and I'll get him to tell you about that before he takes us out to pay some more bills here. All yours, Jay.
Thank you very much, Scott. And yes, you can tune in for my show. It's called The Block Party here on Whistle FM. It's a weekly dance music show, and it's heard every Saturday from 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. Eastern Time. We've got some great guest DJs and guest dance music artists. So please tune in for The Block Party every Saturday, 11 p.m. right here on Whistle FM. And we'll be back here on Sharing the Burden on Whistle FM.